And it's time for Sports Lit 101, our weekly look at great books and when we get the opportunity to talk to authors of said books. Bruce Pratt joining us here as always and on the phone, the author of a wonderful new book entitled We Got Him. We welcome Elizabeth Searle to Downtown. Elizabeth, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the book is just a delightful read, and not the first time that you've taken a work of art and set it amidst real-life issues, though a little bit different than the story of Tanya and Nancy.
Yes. It's quite the polar opposite. Speaking of Tanya and Nancy, definitely. Tanya and Nancy, of course, the ice skating figure skating scandal of the century. That was a rock opera that we did as a kind of dark comedy. And that we're still doing. It just played in Chicago for 6 weeks. But yes, this is a whole different kind of story and kind of writing endeavor.
Elizabeth, this is Bruce. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, halfway through the book, I said, I almost tried to call you up and ask you this. I decided to wait till I read the book. How soon after these events unfolded did this get in your head? Because it had to really have gotten in there hard and heavy.
Yes. You're right. I mean, obviously the incidents happened in 2013, and I was writing this book by the summer. You know, that was April 2013. And I would say right away, Bruce, and I know you're a fiction writer too, you know, something gets in your head that you can't get out of it. And for me, of all the traumatic things that happened that week and that night of the manhunt, the most awful, in a sense, was seeing the face of, you know, Tsarnaev as a 19-year-old bombing suspect. And the fact that he was so young was just awful to me as a mom, as a person. And I couldn't get that out of my mind. The combination of a boy and a bomb, you know, that just was so awful. And so that's what kept sticking in my mind.
One of the things and this is true of all of your fiction, is that this is a story that springs from the characters. And these are very richly drawn characters. I mean, I felt like I knew each one of them. What I was really interested in is how Sarah, who is one of the two main characters, our audience knows, we talked about it, is sort of the focus of it, as everybody else's focus. There was a line somewhere about, I think Evie says, everybody falls in love with Sarah.
Yeah.
And so we learn about all the characters sort of as their relationship to her. And we learn a lot about her in her relationship to the bomber. How long did it take you to figure that little out? Because that's great.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, I had that line in my mind. It's funny you should draw on it, Bruce, because, you know, again, you're a writer, so you know. This idea of, you know, the person everyone falls in love with. I have, in my first novel, someone like that. And I like having that person be the center. And there's different kinds of love, and love mixed with anger, you know, for instance, with her stepson, who's a major character in the book, who slightly resembles the bombing suspects, just in that he's dark-haired, dark-eyed, and young, but he has major issues with the stepmother. And as you say, she, in the throes of giving birth, you know, not in her right mind, she really has a lot of nightmarish imagery of the bombing suspect running through her head and mixing him up in her confused mind with, you know, she's having a baby boy, she has a stepson out on the loose, and then there's this frightening figure of a bombing suspect who's a young man literally hovering above her on the TV screen, because the main plot of the novel, as you know, is she goes into premature labor the night of the manhunt. So all of that mixes in this nightmarish way in her head, and it was interesting to me, Bruce, because I use the title, as you know, Mayor Menino texted or tweeted the message, "We got him," when they captured the bombing suspect. And that's one meaning of the title. But another one is, to me, you know, we got, as a society, all these troubled young men in varying degrees. And the bomber obviously represents just totally beyond the pale, whereas the young stepson in my novel is much more on the edge. He's drawn to violence, but he hasn't quite gone over that line yet. But he's got a lot of issues, and he's acting out, and he's trying to get attention.
Well, and with Sarah's character, you go to some very dark places that we don't talk about in polite company very often. And it's those fears that some of what happens as a parent is completely out of our control.
Oh, definitely. Yes, I wanted to get at those fears. And, you know, Sarah's husband, who's another character in the book, Paul, he really worries about this son of his because he hasn't gotten to raise the son. The son has grown up with his biological mother, who's an unstable person herself, many miles away, you know, in another state. And he worries, you know, I reference, you know, you can tell, Bruce, and you know, I watch a lot of news. I mean,
yes.
I'm a news junkie. You know, I'm always watching the news. My father was a total, you know, devotee of watching the news all the time and thought it was the greatest show on earth. So I do that, too. And, you know, Paul, the father, worries when he hears, you know, about the Newtown shooting, the horrible Newtown shooting, also involving a young man, starts to worry in his mind, what if my son was drawn into this violence? And, you know, the son already has had, you know, an arrest for an incident, again, drawn from a news story, you know, here in my local town where I'm calling from, of Arlington, Massachusetts. Bruce, there really was a strange incident in a graveyard that I reference in the book as something the stepson was involved with. So all those things kind of come together for me.
Well, one of the things I've noticed, and I think this was true in your first book, Four-Sided Bed, and it was definitely true in Girl Held in Home, that how much can we really know, or how well can we really know our children? And mm-hmm. and I find that fascinating because a lot of writers won't take that on. You know, they'll mm-hmm. do domesticity. How well can I know my spouse or whatever? But how well can I know? How well do I know my child? And when it's the stepmother, and I think this is what makes this so intriguing, is who spent so much less time, she has to constantly go with her gut. And what mm-hmm. her gut's telling her isn't good.
Yes, that's so true, Bruce. And, you know, that's another of those worries of parenting is, you know, am I doing the right thing? Am I doing too much, too little? Yes, she is really confused how to handle this kid. In a way, when he was younger and he would just come for visits, and she was at that point trying to have a baby, wanting to have a baby desperately. She was very needy, and he was very needy, the young stepson. And she would sort of overdo, just, you know, smother affection on him and be his best buddy. And, you know, he got kind of confused signals from her where she was so loving. And so he forms a kind of crush on her, and she doesn't know how to handle that. And what she does with a lot of things in this story is she buries her head in the sand. You know, she's determined to think the best. She's determined to kind of control this birth night and have her baby in exactly the way she wants and have her family be exactly what she wants. And of course, when something like the bombing happens, you know, it's just a huge lesson to us all. You can't plan anything, and there can be a terrorist incident right at your doorstep, you know, on top of everything she's worried about in her own little family.
Yeah, go ahead, Rich.
Well, no, I was just going to say that I kept thinking as I read the book about a friend of ours who actually came on the show, I think the day after the marathon bombing. And I believe she lived in Alston, and she and her husband had infant twins and woke up in the morning to the SWAT team knocking on her door and asking for the keypad code to open her garage to see if Tsarnaev was in there. And I kept thinking, you couldn't, this book would not be as effective if you hadn't lived through so much of this personally yourself.
Well, we knew family in Watertown, you know, had a similar incident where they had a knock on the door. You know, there were officers with assault rifles wanting to search their backyard. I mean, and that was, you know, someone who had a young boy in their house who was a friend of our son's. So, yes, it's very close to home, and it's very scary, and exactly the kind of story you're describing where there's this juxtaposition of, you know, twin babies, and suddenly there's a knock on the door, and it's, you know, armed officials looking for a killer. It's very scary, and that was the kind of thing that spurred me on in imagining this. And when I give readings from it, I found there are a lot of people who really want to tell their story, even if their story of that night was something like, I remember someone saying at one of my readings, they were alone in their apartment, all they had was their computer, they were desperately Facebook messaging friends of theirs so they wouldn't be alone, because, you know, you weren't allowed to leave your place, you know, you had to shelter in place, you were locked down. So that kind of thing people went through, you know, and they want to say what happened to them that night.
You know, one of the things I think that's really great about this book is the way that the media constantly intrudes in what should be a very private event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Sarah's trying to have this baby, but none of the nurses, the doctors, no one can really turn their attention away from this. And it was the way it was. I remember my mm-hmm. wife, Janet, was supposed to drive to Watertown that night. And I said, Janet, they just blew something up in Boston. And that we just then dropped everything. And that's all we paid attention to for 48 hours. Her, you know, mm-hmm. her brother and sister-in-law live right on Riverside Avenue in Watertown. And it was right near where they ended up finding him. You know, I was thinking like the earthquake during the World Series, the 9/11 bombings and baseball and all. The Boston Marathon now will sort of always, in a way, be defined by this. And the way that I think you really captured the way it defined everybody's life at that moment. It had to be hard to keep reliving that.
Well, it is. And yet it's also, as you know, as a writer, it's, you know, cathartic or whatever it is. You know, you process it. And, you know, when these images and experiences get inside you and you don't know what to do with them, you know, if you're a writer, what you do is figure out a way of telling a story about it. And so there's a process that, you know, makes it more manageable, at least for a while in your head. But yes, it was, you know, hard to deal with real life material and wanting to get all the details correct. You know, I turned to the Massachusetts State report on this whole incident, which is sort of the last word on what time everything happened and all of that. But yes, it is. It's hard dealing with, you know, real life material, and yet that's the material that's very charged. And for me, as you noted, often news stories are very charged. And as you say, the voice of the newscasters is all through the novel, often in all capital letters, you know, coming from the TV, just trying to capture that, you know, when you're in the midst of a crisis, it seems like the TV is always shouting at you, you know, telling you all these headlines.
Yeah. Now, will you be doing any readings in Maine?
Yes, I hope to. I am actually working on coordinating that with my favorite bookseller in the
Barbara
world.
Kelly, I'm Kelly. Sure. Yes, absolutely.
Barbara Kelly, Kelly
yeah.
of Kelly Books. And I very much want to do a reading in Maine. And I actually have another book, an anthology that involves a number of Stone Coast MFA graduates. And, of course, you, Bruce, are one of our star alums. And we're going to do a reading from that. It's an anthology about soap operas, believe it or not. And it has a lot of great writers in it. And that'll be in July, in early July. We're going to wind up doing a reading in the Portland area. But I definitely want to read from We Got Him in the Portland area, too.
And Elizabeth, I know Bruce told you last week that we had one of your former students on the show talking about his new book.
Yes, that was so great to hear. And oh my gosh, I looked up that after hearing the excellent, excellent interview, which I learned from about sleep. And I was so impressed to see that. And you know, I did want to add, you asked about readings in Maine. I'm forgetting. I am reading in Kittery, Maine at the Kittery Library on May 12th. And that's with a fellow New Rivers Press author, Bruce.
All right. Who's that?
That is Lynn Ziman.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yes, who did Frozen Voices. And she has a wonderful book, Heinzman. Her last name is spelled with an H. And it's a fantastic book about a real-life disaster, also based on a news story, but one from long ago.
Well, that's great. Elizabeth, thanks so much for talking with us. And as soon as you have anything set up in Maine, let me know, and we will let everybody else know. And good luck with this and with new projects, and I hope I see you soon.
I do too, Bruce. Thank you. And thank you, Rich. It's so great to be on the show.
Our pleasure. We hope to do it again. It's Elizabeth Searle, author of We Got 'Em. Absolutely wonderful read. Check it out. Well, anywhere they sell terrific books.